Hello and welcome to Binge or Cringe. I'm Jane Ellen.
And I'm Adam Cravens.
And I'm Anna Grace.
And I'm going to start with something that I know Anna Grace, I hear, is going to disagree with me on, but she's wrong. Netflix has made a Christmas film.
Yes, it has.
And it is called...
Is this the one with Kurt Russell?
Yes, it is.
Okay, I ever since I saw Tombstone, I kind of fell in love with Kurt Russell.
Jenna is head over heels in love with Kurt Russell.
Has she seen Big Trouble in...
No.
She
only knows him as the dad from the Guardians of the Galaxy Dose.
That's it?
That is all she
knows. Oh, it's the tip of the ice. How comfortable are you with your children watching Tarantino films?
Fine with me.
Okay. Hateful Eight.
Oh, yeah. Hateful Eight's really
And good. He also plays he's kind of the equivalent of the Jason Voorhees of Death Proof.
I was going to start him with the Computer Wore Tennis Shoes.
Sure. Okay. Well, I mean, we can go the other direction if you want to.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Death Proof, he plays a guy named Stuntman Mike. And what he does...
Stuntman.
Stuntman Mike, he has a Death Proof car for him.
Okay.
Basically, he
lures... How did I miss this movie?
He lures people into his car, gets them to ride with him, they're not necessarily shady terms, but he gets them to get in the car with him. Then he rolls the car and murders his victims...
Very useful. That is a useful way to kill someone.
It's a Tarantino movie.
When did that come out?
Came out 06, 07, something like that.
That's actually a very useful way to kill someone.
It is one of the most underappreciated and underseen Tarantino films. Shot in Knoxville, Tennessee.
I was either pregnant with Jenna or having Jenna, and so there you go.
Stuff was still going on whenever...
I only know him as Ego from Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Do you know who Snake Plissken is?
No.
Oh, wow.
I just rewatched that, by the way.
Escape from New York. There's a sequel. Escape from L.A.
Don't bother.
Don't bother with it.
Okay.
Pretty much anything he ever did with John Carpenter.
Okay.
You need to treat that as the Gospels of Kurt Russell.
Mm-hmm. Is this when he's young Kurt Russell or Kurt Russell as he looks now?
Okay, Kurt Russell, I'm going to tell you, Kurt Russell was the Zac Efron of Disney before.
Or even
there was
the Zach Morris
Efron.
The last words, supposedly, out of Walt Disney's mouth were Kurt Russell.
Really?
Because he used to be a Disney kid. I'm just saying, it's either the last person he talked to or the last
I think it would be the last person he talked to.
I wasn't there. I wasn't there. I'm not permitted to talk to Walt's frozen head.
Okay.
But.
I don't know. Maybe you can.
So here's the thing.
Maybe it'll respond. You don't
Anna
know.
Grace, I'm going to put this in perspective. He was born the same year as one of your aunts, the oldest of my sisters.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. That's not her. Anyway, and he was making movies for Disney since he was a teenager.
Okay.
And now, he has never stopped working.
I want to say even maybe preteen.
Yeah. I think maybe it's under 10,
yeah.
too.
What was his first movie?
We don't have time to go through everything because we're going to go off on
honestly,
a tangent.
Honestly, I don't think you're far off with Computer Wear Tennis Shoes.
I think that was one of his earlier starring ones.
Okay, question. Mm-hmm. In Guardians of the Galaxy 2, the young version...
Oh, no, it's an Elvis movie. That was his first movie. He has a one-line speaking role in an Elvis movie. And funny enough, one of the first films he does with John Carpenter is a movie that he plays, guess?
Elvis.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. Also, anything Kurt Russell does, his TV movies, his theatrically released movies, his Marvel movies, his John Carpenter movies, watch everything that Kurt Russell is in.
Okay, here's...
After I watch everything Tom Hiddleston is in.
Okay, so Kurt Russell, huge Disney kid star. In 1979, Kurt Russell makes a movie with the only woman he ever married, Susan Hubley.
And, did they get married?
Yeah, and divorced, obviously. Okay. And it was Elvis. And in 1979 and 80, that's all you heard.
Elvis.
was Kurt Russell as Elvis because it was so extraordinary. Now, we're going to jump into Netflix territory. And Kurt Russell is Santa in The Christmas Chronicles. How did Jenna come to fall in love? Because Santa, and I've got to look it up. I'm sure that was Little Steven in there. But Santa sings a song.
Oh,
all Elvisified. And
it really is.
Well, that makes perfect.
Yes.
Like, I was already going to watch this thing, but I'm just like, now you just signed, sealed, delivered.
It is amazing.
I don't even like Christmas that much. I love Kurt Russell more than I love
Kurt Russell. Kurt Russell.
I totally enjoyed this movie. Like, I don't know what her deal is with it.
Okay, I didn't hate it, but honestly, Kurt Russell was fine. It was the other actors that annoyed me.
I thought you were going to go in a different place,
I was about to have to say,
I'm going to unplug your mic.
I'm not going to ruin...
We don't disrespect Kurt Russell.
I know
here.
We don't disrespect
I'm not
going to
ruin
Russell.
Mrs. Santa for you,
but the kid
it's
actors.
Extremely satisfying, and it starts with Oliver Hudson. Oliver Hudson is in it. And Oliver, he raised Oliver, but he's not his biological father.
This is fascinating.
Delightful.
I'm mad I didn't watch this the moment like,
I know.
It appeared in
I
the
mean,
queue.
I am going to watch it again.
Why?
Kurt Russell's hair, first of all.
Oh my goodness. Like,
followed by Kurt Russell's hair.
Oh my goodness. It's second like only to
it's
like
glorious.
An original Picasso. Like it's just it's full and voluminous. Like I'd worship his beard if it was a religion.
Fair enough.
So
okay,
but the great part is, hold on, he's Kurt Russell sized. But he's Santa, so the running joke is...
I'm not that fat.
Do I really look like that?
I
take that,
like
fat
that.
Santa. Is my butt really that... It's just amusing. And he has all the knowledge of Santa, of course.
Okay, question. Would you have watched the movie if Kurt Russell wasn't in it?
I don't know. I mean, for me, that's why...
Probably eventually. But,
yeah, eventually.
I mean, keep in mind, that's why you put an actor of note in any role. Like,
because
either,
nobody's going to care about these stupid
either
kid
to
actors.
Get somebody to go, like, the first weekend to see a movie. Like, okay, when you put Dwayne Johnson in something...
You go see it for Dwayne Johnson.
You have quadrupled the possibility of somebody going to see it opening weekend.
Because it's Dwayne friggin' Johnson.
Because first of all, I thought, Kurt Russell is Santa?
See, you and I had similar reactions, except mine was... Kurt Russell is Santa!
And it's the way they portray Santa's ability to go from chimney to chimney, in my mind, that must be how it actually works.
Not mine.
Oh, it's mine. It's great. There's just...
It's kind of like that Back to the Future logic.
Yes.
Where it's like, well, I don't think we can actually time travel, but if we can, that seems like the way you do it.
Yes.
Okay. So, would it be a spoiler if I said how he did it? How he went from chimney to chimney?
I guess not.
So, basically, he...
Santa goes chimney to chimney?
He does.
He just appears in, like, red smoke. And
it's almost like red
chimney.
Fairy dust.
Yeah, like
fairy dust
fairy
and
dust.
Smoke.
This isn't like The Adventures of Sabrina, where,
no.
like,
no.
Santa's like,
no.
and I call upon the dark one.
No.
There's a reason I wear red. Blah, blah, blah.
It's as if he took Melania's trees, they all burned a bright red, and then he could go chimney to chimney. The reindeer are great. It's just, at the very beginning, I thought this is going to be your typical sappy Christmas movie, which has everything in it that people find comforting, but it's just,
Your Hallmark Christmas movie. Yeah.
Because, first of all, it's not a Disney movie, but it starts with these parents and their kids are aging, and clearly they love Christmas. So it's just videotaping of them.
And then you can just feel it in your heart.
You know, one of them's not going to make it. One of them. But
yeah,
Oliver Hudson, the dad, was a firefighter and
runs into a building.
Angry do you think Tim Allen is? That
I know.
He's just like, Santa Claus is my territory, Russell.
I know. And I really do enjoy
Santa Claus movies. Or actually, it'd be probably more like,
I think Tim Allen is Santa. I dig that whole thing happening. But this,
Yes, Mom, we know you worship when Kurt Russell.
You're going to
No. Your mother and I worship
Adam and
Kurt
Mom
Russell.
You are going to either Kurt call Russell. Me or text me when Santa ho ho ho.
Oh God, please.
I'm going to tell you right now, the kids may stay up late tonight. How long is this thing?
An hour and a half, maybe.
I can look up
how long it is.
I truly enjoyed it, and there was enough different to it that it wasn't the same Christmas Santa story.
Which, I mean, plagues a lot of.
I'm going to say there are wormholes. I saw things that I called wormholes.
Okay, here's the thing. On the poster on Netflix for it, you look at it, and Kurt Russell looks great. But, like, okay, the girl right there.
Where are posters?
The poster thing on here.
I'm sure there's some.
The poster. Is there a physical location for Netflix?
Whatever it's called.
Okay, yeah.
The wallpaper.
The girl looks way too old for like how she actually is in the movie. And
well, she's actually 10 years old.
Well,
yeah, but she looks like,
listen,
the way they've drawn her,
listen,
she looks
the
like
cast of Grease.
Irrelevant.
The cast of Grease. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah.
Oh, irrelevant. Whatever.
Yeah, they're, whatever.
Don't.
Were any of them under 40?
Don't pull Grease into this.
Okay.
Do not.
Here's the point.
The middle-aged cast of Grease.
Do not pull Grease into
the Christmas Chronicles. Just looking in my Facebook feed, I see these people have watched it, and then it's like, exclamation point, exclamation point. It is pushing a lot of buttons on. And I'm digging it.
But is it Thor Ragnarok?
It is not Thor Ragnarok.
Few things are.
But I'm going to say for a Christmas movie that it isn't White Christmas, which I adore.
White Christmas.
I really like this movie, and I plan to watch it again.
Well, again,
I don't.
Netflix.
You don't have to.
Netflix had kind of hooked me with that. But the fact that I'm getting a good review behind it as well. I don't know that it's a holiday masterpiece yet, obviously.
I haven't got to say masterpiece, but
like maybe at least a one in the holiday queue, if you'll.
For sure.
I'm in for that.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's that. I also watched a Walt Disney documentary, which I think was on Netflix. And I saw things that I did not even know. Now, they did not address his frozen head, which kind of bugged me. But
well, when they reanimate it, they'll probably have a special on CNN or something for it.
Walt Disney came from I'm going to say upper middle class family. So way, way, way back in the day, there's footage of him as a kid and his family, which you just usually don't get.
No, not for somebody of that age.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, today where there's footage on YouTube of kids doing everything.
It's an hour and 44 minutes.
Yeah, you can totally watch that. Anyway, so it was fascinating how they were talking to his animators. They talked to one of his daughters. Just all of the connections.
Like they did with that Johnny Cash thing we saw?
Yes, that was also an excellent documentary. But we can't binge on too many documentaries. That was also on Netflix, right?
I think so.
Okay, we'll discuss that a later time because, you know, we actually know them. I learned stuff about Walt Disney I simply didn't know. I didn't know that he lied to get into World War I, and then it ended and he stayed in France for a year just being a delivery cleanup guy with the army and stuff. It's like,
if you completely discount, like, all of the things he did, the company that he parlayed, like that basically owns everything now. If you take all of that out of his life, he's still a reasonably fascinating character.
I didn't know that the first animated film that won him an Oscar, he, much like Kevin Smith did, he mortgaged everything. He used every penny he could to reshoot it in color because he had the vision that color was where it's at.
Well, I mean, like, a lot of people don't remember this. The Snow White and the Seven Dwarves, like, everybody told him that was a stupid idea.
Yeah.
Really?
Like, yeah, they were like, what are you doing? A feature-length cartoon?
Because then you saw cartoons before movies.
Yeah, it was a...
I mean, they told him, it's insane. You will never make your money, but that you're going to bankrupt your company.
What are you doing?
Comes out, I want to, is it? Was
37.
I was going to say, it's the same year or near the same year as Gone with the Wind and Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, that's 39. This is right before.
Pretty sure it's like, 37.
Becomes one of the highest grossing films, adjusted for inflation, I believe is still in the top 10 highest grossing films of all time. Basically, that movie bankrolls what Disney becomes. Like, he had kind of put together a not a fortune, but a reasonable sum of money doing like Steamboat Willie and stuff like that. Snow White and the Seven Dwarves is the movie that starts allowing Walt Disney to become the Walt Disney is the entity that we know him as, or not even him, I guess, the company as it is today.
I find it funny that the fairy tales he used, when you look back on their history, they are extremely dark. And I'm thinking, how did you manage to make that so lighthearted? Like, in Cinderella.
The other half of it, you already have brand recognition, and almost all of those are in public domain.
Fair enough. But, like, in Cinderella, at the end of it, she's
talking about the cutting the heels.
Yeah,
like,
they cut
off
the heels, and then she sends birds
to peck out the eyes
of her.
Yeah, like, Grimm didn't, they didn't play. Like,
and
when
they
it came
got
to their
stories
endings.
From other places.
Okay, now, Netflix has two. I have seen both of them. One is called Walt Before Mickey, and it's a movie. It's reenacted, okay? And you'll pick up some information that maybe you didn't know. It's okay. However, the one that I'm talking about is called Walt, the Man Behind the Myth, and it is narrated by Dick Van Dyke. And it was made 2 years ago.
Bert from
That's exactly
Mary
he goes,
Poppins.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. This is Dick Van Dyke.
Yeah.
Hello.
And it's exceptionally good. I never really thought about it, but they're showing him as maybe, I guess he's in his 40s or something, and he's with the animators, and he is acting out what the Wicked Witch is supposed to be doing as she peers over the window, and he's acting out the facial expressions and how they brought in all the animals to do to draw like the old masters for Bambi.
If I'm remembering correctly, Jungle Book is the last film that he had anything to do with before his passing, and there is a period that Disney goes through in the 70s and 80s that does not have Walt Disney's leadership. I think Roy Disney was the one in charge. It's like we don't think of it now because Disney is just this monolithic like powerhouse. But there was a point in the 80s that like Don Bluth Studios, those movies were outgrossing Disney animated movies. And I know that seems unthinkable now, but like You had these films that weren't connecting with audience. Like, when Walt Disney passed, like, that company, like, people were genuinely concerned that Walt Disney might take a turn for the worse.
And this, like, may sound silly when you put it in perspective at what Disney owns, basically the world of entertainment, but what he did for animation and film is simply just as groundbreaking as the special effects in A New Hope or in Terminator 2 or Alien.
Jurassic
it was
Park.
Just,
he was a trendsetter.
Mind blowing what he did.
Like if you Sleeping Beauty, like the budget for that was astronomical because he had this idea of what he wanted the animation to look like in that, and they're like, well, you can't do that. But, like, you don't tell Walt...
Telling you can't do that
to Walt Disney is like telling Steven Spielberg, yeah, we can't make dinosaurs
we
like
can't
that.
Make stuff
or James Cameron, no, your movie isn't going to make $2.7 billion. Like, the man was such a visionary, like, in the same way that those two are, that their minds operate obviously on different levels than we mere mortals, and I don't know if they can see the future or what it is, but like he would just tell, he's like, yes, we can do it, we're going to do it, and this is the movie
that
we're going to do it in.
That's what one of the guys said. He goes, Walt Disney didn't know how to do it, but then he would figure out and say, and I'm going to figure out how to do it better.
And he did.
He did.
What amazes me is that they would make these feature-length films. And you got to remember, they did this all on paper and then they would color it. And
you're not CGIing in anything.
You're not
digitally copying
tablet.
Like any of this.
It's
and I'm here,
what
like,
they
the
did is extraordinary. And so,
and I mean honestly, the artwork, the artistry.
He sent his animators to school because he said we were doing things that they needed to learn, and they were the best at the time anyway. And mind-blowing, now I've forgotten, it was Chester, his first character that he made money off of at the time, the distributor owned your intellectual property.
Yeah.
And so the distributor said, hey, you know this guy you've been drawing? Well, we're going to have someone else do it.
Oswald.
And they just, and they could legally take his intellectual property, which now.
By the way, like, Walt got the last laugh,
yeah,
boys.
That's true.
I'm just going to let you know. Like, apparently that set him off, like, in a way that, like, Robert De Niro got set off in, like, The Untouchables.
Uh-huh.
He's like, I'm going to own every IP out there. I'm going to own your IP, his IP. I'm going to take that IP, and I'm going to burn it to the ground.
Yeah, pretty much.
This is
so
kind of a fun fact and also kind of upsetting. I do have a friend who, until I explained it to her, did not know who Stan Lee was.
Wow.
That
did not know
sad.
What he did.
I mean, that hurts. My
like, she didn't know Tim Burton. She didn't know Stan Lee.
I don't know how you do that.
Yeah.
I don't either.
I was like, what the heck? I mean, I know you don't know too much about certain movies, and I get that, but how do you not know?
How are you not touched in some way by one of those?
Yeah. Honey, some people, their parents just don't love them enough. And so they don't teach them the important things.
You mean my entire school?
Just how it is, man.
I didn't raise your entire school,
you
know, okay?
But I can't. Adam and I know how to do it right.
I'm saying my kids know.
Yeah.
I'm putting it out there.
Okay, my entire school.
My mama didn't raise no
from
fool.
Your yeah. kids. Your kids are exempt, but the rest of my entire
yeah,
school.
Yeah,
fair enough.
It's sad. It's sad, but that's. That's how you meet your people, because they were raised by parents who knew what was important in life. And it's where Walt Disney fits into the world.
It's almost like shooting up a beacon. Like you,
yes.
Once they see, okay, you remember in like Harry Potter, when they throw up the dark mark and like
yeah.
the other Death Eaters could just be like, oh, there's the other Death Eater. It's like
okay,
that,
well,
but
that's
not
exactly
evil.
How they do it.
But not evil.
Yeah.
Okay, so first off, the Death
Eaters. I did.
The,
I just
okay.
touched
you know,
my finger.
It's on the other side of
you know,
the arm.
We don't care. Anyway, I haven't seen it yet, but I'm thinking that Netflix is going after HBO's awesome documentaries, because the next one I plan to watch is They'll Like Me When I'm Dead, Orson Welles. Or They'll Love Me When I'm Dead, something, whatever.
That
Which is another
depressing.
Fascinating
yes.
person.
That yes.
sounds very depressing.
And yes, the Johnny Cash one is excellent as well. It's Johnny Cash and Nixon, and it has a clever name, but fascinating. So,
and it basically just says Johnny Cash did whatever the heck he wanted,
which is awesome.
That's not inaccurate.
No, it is not. But it's I've already forgotten the name, but it's so cool because we know his sister and her daughter and her daughter, and to start out with Miss Joanne talking, it's, oh, it's Miss Joanne.
Was it called Folsom County Blues? Like
that's probably mentioned.
It was really very interesting to see how the Nixon campaign was working with Cash.
And then Cash went, ha, no.
Well, no, then he went to Vietnam and started thinking thoughts.
And it's like, no.
And it was fascinating, really.
It was.
Because he and his family, he was a patriot, and that was his thing.
Also, you got to learn that his dad hated him, and then his brother died, and his dad blamed him.
Oh, I knew about his brother died. That was horrible.
Johnny Cash is one of the most genuinely fascinating people. Like, musicians and just celebrities in general, like, period.
Yeah, and when I first met his niece, I always remembered this because we have the same birthday, me and Johnny Cash. February 26th. So I told her that. And she said, oh, do you know Uncle Johnny? And I'm thinking, how would I
know your
Uncle Johnny? But after getting to know the family and going to his house a lot and stuff, it's like, I'm sure had he been alive when I knew them, that he was just a down-to-earth kind of
been,
guy.
Yeah.
I probably would have known Uncle Johnny and called him that or whatever. I mean, Anna Grace sat in his favorite chair, and now she knows how cool that was. But anyway,
I remember it.
I think Netflix is really starting to step up their documentaries, because I have always loved a good documentary.
Netflix.
They're stepping up their documentaries because Disney's taken every other movie.
Netflix and HBO, I mean, are honestly like becoming kind of your boutique shop for television. I don't know if television's the right word for
Nobody
it anymore.
Nobody goes to boutique shops.
But like, I mean, you want a good quality like television show?
You go to Netflix.
You go
or
to
HBO.
Netflix
or
HBO.
Hulu.
Like, you want a good documentary, like.
And that's why I was hoping The Christmas Chronicles was what it was, because I thought Netflix produced this. And it has Kurt Russell. There is a chance that this is going to be exceptionally entertaining.
And maybe this is what allows both of those places to do it. HBO and Netflix don't have advertisers, which means like they don't have like
nobody has them in their pocket.
Right.
So oh, did you guys know
all they have is subscribers? You have to do is make sure that your subscribers. Mm-hmm. are happy, or that you're getting subscriptions.
Yeah.
Like, so, like, HBO, like, whenever John Oliver says something, he pretty much has carte blanche on whatever he wants
it's
to say,
so
whatever
funny.
Subject he wants to lampoon. You don't have to worry about offending, you know, Viacom or Universe, or, I mean, any of these things. You can say what you want as long as the subscribers like it. Like, you can make a show like Game of Thrones. You don't have to worry that like, oh, well, you can only show that after 9 p.m.
Nope.
No, it's because it's pay. It's not even both are not even both pay cable. Pay per subscription. That is a good way to describe them. They make the kind of content they want. They spend bukus of money on it because the money isn't passing hands from like them to the advertisers or vice versa. They're just getting the money. Like, I can't think of a show nowadays that like. I want to say 70-80% of the stuff I watch is from HBO or Netflix.
Mm-hmm. Like, or Hulu.
Okay, I'll give you, like, Looming Tower was good on HBO, but they're not producing necessarily the volume.
Yeah,
that the
I know.
Two of the,
like,
the two of them are
most
producing.
Of what I see on Hulu is stuff that has aired already.
Right.
And it's
on
there.
Another network. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I'm talking about, like, first run, what, it's not syndicate. I don't know what to call it.
And it's about to be Amazon as we wait for our Lord of the Rings and so
landing
on and so
Jack Ryan and the Lord of the Rings is no small feat.
Exactly.
Well, it depends on who's behind it.
Anyway, we have, so much more binging and industry news to talk about, but we are going to have to wait another week because.
Well, seeing as how we do this at least once a week, I think that'll.
We do it every day. We just don't record it all
the
time.
If we just exhausted every bit of information we had, like, this wouldn't be a podcast.
That's
it would
true.
Be a live stream that played 7 days a week.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that we can get this puppy down to 45 minutes to an hour every week
that
constantly amazes me. You guys don't know what kind of... This is wizardry on the level of Gandalf the frigging get gray. Okay? Just...
Yeah.
Flame of Undoon, just crack.
Be prepared for She-Ra next week, because there's a reboot that
I'm
going to
watch. And
it's
already up?
Yes, it's already up. It's been up for 2 weeks, maybe. And it looks really good.
Also, like, Netflix just landed the deal with the intellectual properties of, like, The Witches, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory,
Narnia.
BFG, like...
They don't need to remake those. They're
they
fine.
Are about to...
Yeah, it's going
to
be a big
deal. But they don't need
deal.
To remake them.
It does. Here's what you will realize as you age.
You remake them, you get more money.
Well, no, there's that. But it's just generationally, for some people to really latch onto it, they have to see it at a certain age, and it has to be new
and
to them.
They have to see it through their prism. And
yes.
Like, whereas in like the Gene Wilder version of, like, you're never going to touch Gene Wilder as Willy Wonka
you're not.
For me. However, there's some idiot out there that thinks that Johnny Depp is his Willy Wonka.
He is not, and that is a horrible movie.
That's actually the only one I've seen.
Yeah, I know. It is a
horrible... Well, that's the point I'm making. There are some people out there, for all intents and purposes, that's their Willy Wonka.
And we will have another show, don't you two go off right now, where Adam will explain what Tim Burton is... good at, and it will take him about 2 seconds, And then Anna Grace will go on and on about...
Okay. You've known me long enough to know that I can't even get into the description of why I can't describe something in 2.5 seconds in 2.5 seconds. It took me 10 seconds to get that sentence out right there.
Okay. Maybe I will get... No.
I know.
She just told us not to do this.
She is very pro Burton and you're
I'm not pro Burton. I like his style and I like some of the movie...
And we will save this.
She's saying save it.
We will save this.
Is what she's saying. Because we will break open the dam and those waters cannot be forced back.
I have unleashed Adam and his Tim Burton musings before.
She already saw like the fire in my eyes when she did it. And she's like, I shouldn't have said it. So
there's that. But yes.
It's like telling Mr. T that you don't pity fools. Like, just... You better be ready for a fight.
It's like telling you that Marvel and DC are stupid.
I'm saying, like, you just don't poke the bear. Like,
yeah. So we're gonna save that for later, and we will watch more things. Of course, there's something else I know I watch. Oh, it's not that important. We'll just talk about it later because we can, and we'll be back next week. And you can't stop us. Time can't even stop us. We're going to last forever like this, Adam.
If we could turn back time.
Hair flip.
Do we believe in...
No.
Anyway, thank you so much for listening to Binge or Cringe. I'm Jane Ellen.
I'm Adam Cravens.
And thank you, Anna Grace, for popping in.
Very welcome.